Podcast Talk by Gamma, keeping you connected and protected.
Welcome to DAS Talk, the essential podcast on distributed antenna systems and in-building communication. Hosted by Peter, VP of Gamma, and Philip Nicholas. This Gamma Electronics series focuses on emergency response and safety. Join us as we navigate the challenges of building effective communication systems for North America's first responders. We delve into the advancements in emergency responder radio systems and the transformative impact on new technologies. Tune in for insightful discussions aimed at increasing knowledge and awareness in the DAS field. Whether you're a professional or an enthusiast, DAS Talk is your gateway to understanding the nexus of technology, safety, and communication.
Hey everybody, this is Peter with Gamma. Super excited to be with you guys today. We've got Gil with Gamma as well. And then we have Elia Betbadal with us. Super, super excited. Got a good squad here. We're going to be talking more about our favorite topic, our favorite passion. And today's episode is going to all be about Elia and what he's done in his life, because I think he's done a lot. I got a gut feeling this guy is just done some amazing things. And so I can't wait to hear about it. Gil's co-hosting with me today. Philip's out for the day. He'll be doing other things. So we'll all be kind of chiming in and talking about our favorite passion. But before we get into our favorite passion, which is emergency responder enhancement communication systems, we want to know a little bit about Elia. Elia, tell us about you, what your background is. Tell us about what's up. What's going on with Elia, man?
Let's start from the beginning. I'll just do a quick recap. I grew up in the west side of San Jose in a small town called Saratoga. I have an older brother, and my mom and dad pretty much allowed us to kind of run free and choose whatever passion we had in life. They supported almost everything I ever wanted to do. So I was very fortunate enough to have parents like that, and had a very competitive brother, which also helped me kind of step up my game. Grew up there. It was great. A small town environment. You know, after I went to college, I went to a few different colleges, didn't know what I wanted to do. I landed at Berkeley, going to junior college in Berkeley to transfer into UC Berkeley. And right when I was getting in, I decided to drop out. My mom had called me up one day and said, hey, your dad's gone and the money's dried up. So you got to get a job. And so I was trying to do both at the same time. Started working for a company in Berkeley, California called Comtech. And I started going door-to-door sales for selling TV, telephone, and internet service. I did that for about a year and started doing very well. I had a crew of about 30 guys working with me. And at some point along the way, I decided not to go back to school. And I started my first company, DishNet Direct, in 2001. We provided TV service and internet service to residential properties initially. And then we moved up into hotels and hospitals and healthcare facilities throughout the West Coast, becoming a strong partner with Dish Network. I rode that for quite some time. A lot of cable cutting started happening as Netflix came around. And I realized that this kind of probably time to exit this industry. And right around the same time, 9/11 legislation, the 9/11 Act legislation came out in 2011, 10 years after what happened in New York. We were in a position where we were doing all kinds of low voltage systems at a property. It was about 1.5 million square feet. And they asked us if you could do an ERCS. We were doing all kinds of fire alarm systems and low voltage design systems. We're submitting to the city their fire alarm. At that time, they said IRC systems, you know, kind of follow along the line of life safety, which they absolutely do. And that's my first endeavor was in 2013 on a very large project that I partnered up with a couple different companies to accomplish. And that was the beginning of IRCs for us and getting into then eventually into carrier DAS. It's been a crazy ride. When I started DAS Systems, we got so much interest initially from our existing clientele basis because they just didn't know who to trust. And they came to a person that they knew for many years, but didn't know that I was in IRCs yet. So I was just kind of being very transparent with people what I was learning, and I was giving the information what I was learning at the same time to my clients so they can understand what was going on, because this was such a new thing in 2013 and 2014. A lot of my developers really did not know what this all was and what the implications were, and I was learning very quickly what was going on. I was lucky enough to have people like Gilbert actually help me along the way and others. That have actually educated me and my team to kind of get us to where we are now and trying to become a thought leader in this industry.
Oh, that's very cool. That sounds kind of interesting. So you went from sort of, you know, pulling cables for, you know, internet and pulling cables for TV to designing Ersi systems and building Ersi systems. That's it. That's a pretty big, that's a big jump, man.
It was a big jump, but we were designing fire alarm systems at that point. We were designing 2-way systems at that point. We were doing surveillance systems at that point, access control systems. And we actually did have an R background. When we were building head-end systems back in 03, 04, up until 2013, we were building these monster head-end systems. And we had cable plants that we have to deal with distribution. We were getting into RF inside of cable a long time ago. And we understood the importance of balancing a system, creating no noise in a system, sealing a system. We had an understanding of how to deal with cable and RF already. And so this was a nice transition for us and to get into actual wireless. All of these systems kind of go through coaxial cable one way or another, or fiber optic cable, and they just get broadcasted. It was being broadcasted to a TV when I first got into the industry in RF, and now I'm doing it through for essentially two-way antennas. So they're similar in some ways, but it was a big transition because there's so much more regulatory compliance that needs to go with getting an FCC license and how you turn these systems up. So a lot more eyeballs looking at you, and there's.
Well, I was going to ask you, so obviously you've seen this for a long time. So, you know, kind of compare then to now, or maybe some intermediate point, but how have you seen things improve or get better, you know, worse, or at what kind of, what's been your experience being involved with this for so long?
Yeah, I've seen a lot of changes, but I've seen a lot of companies come and go. And I've learned a lot from some of these companies that have come and gone. The industry has, you know, I feel like, there's a lot of people now in this industry are just learning it. And in the beginning, when I was just getting in, there was not many competitors and there wasn't that many players. The players that were doing it were really focused in on this. We kind of jumped in with both feet, got involved with just kind of the mindset behind what this is all about. And then the technology of how this all works and the importance of making sure that process and procedures are followed to a T to ensure that life safety was being achieved. So we really got involved heavily and we learned a lot throughout the process of what not to do. Certain shortcuts that you should not take.
Like what?
That's what I was going to ask you.
Name a few of them. Because I guarantee there's probably dozens and dozens, but name a few that you kind of like put a blind tag on.
Most basic stuff is just creating no noise in the system. And so that is a function of discipline. You got to have the right tools, right? So you got to have sweeping tools that essentially are going to be able to test them, but you got to test each line before you actually finish up and close up that wall, which means every single connector to another point, to another connector, that cable line needs to be tested before we seal everything up. If I make sure that I make everything watertight, that's kind of the same idea, right? I don't want the ship to sink and RF bleeds. We all know that.
Yeah.
So the number one thing I learned and I teach other companies, we rescue, not me, my team. I have an amazing team. We rescue other companies that are struggling in this industry. And we like to sniff out problems from the beginning. So it starts off the basics. The basics are the infrastructure. And if we make sure our infrastructure is watertight, then we can, if we have an issue, we know that that part, the most difficult chasing your tail situation could happen. You do not want that to happen. Let it be a directional coupler that went out. Let it be maybe a multi-switch that went out, but don't let it be your cable plant. And you got 11,000 feet in that property. You got to chase your tail to find out where the problem is. So that's one of the first things I learned is the basics. If we get the basics down right, then we can go forward.
When you say RF bleeds, I know what you're talking about, but I don't think all our viewers do. So why and how is that happening, right? When you're talking about, you got RF bleeding, maybe that's going to cause some oscillation or interference, but tell me, how could that happen?
How could that happen? So first of all, RF bleeding is essentially noise escaping the cable or the connector and then getting back in loop, because that donor antenna and the in-building antenna will start to grab that noise and recirculate it through the property. So essentially you're going to be broadcasting all that noise on every single antenna eventually. So the problem with that is it causes oscillation, but more importantly, it causes interference exterior of the property, which now you're installing a system that's in building. You're now allowing that in building to get out of the building and cause issues outside of the building, maybe a neighboring building, maybe a donor site. that's coming from the city, which now is causing a major problem. We know this as case in San Jose in 2016, we got called at like 11 o'clock at night because they thought it was our system. Thank God it wasn't our system, but it was near a property. And what happened was there was a property that was adjacent to our property that was causing noise that had to shut down the San Jose airport because the RF bleeding got so bad that it was causing an issue with San Jose airport's communication system. The police department and the fire department got there with the jaws of life and essentially opened up the door, like broke open the door, cut all the cables to all the BDAs, the power cables, so that it would just stop. They identified the problem. So there can be serious like implications if people like me are going too fast. And my motto is slow is smooth and smooth is fast. And that's pretty basic, right? If I measure four times, not twice, four times, and I cut once, I'm probably not going to have a problem. It'll take me longer to get there, but I won't have to go back and fix mistakes later on down the road. So I urge everybody, if you're going to get in this industry, move slow. Then you can go fast because you're going to go fast by not fixing your mistakes.
I always think of it like you're going to pay now or pay later. And if you pay later, it's going to be a lot more painful than if you just did it right now.
You lose customers. And you lose customers and you lose credibility. And you're also causing potential, you know, people to be in situations where their lives are at stake and they can't have communication because of something that you did. Maybe you wanted to move fast, but you weren't moving fast the correct way. Moving fast the correct way is proper planning, follow your procedures to a T. Do not cut any corners. You'll get to the finish line much faster. It doesn't seem that way. It seems like it's counterintuitive. However, that's the only way it works. And you'll find that out in most other parts of your life too. It's not just that. It's not just the satellite or the DAS business.
Yeah, good point.
I like the life lesson.
You know, the funny thing is, the more you get older, you find out that these life lessons are interconnected and help you on every aspect of your life. But that's a different kind of conversation.
Yeah, very true.
Absolutely. So there is this link. So DishNet is your kind of legacy company, and then DAS Systems is the new company, right? Is DishNet still going on? Is it still working? You still do work there?
Exactly. So DishNet Direct is still a low voltage contractor, life safety contractor. DAS Systems primarily only deals, DAS Systems only deals with ERCS, carrier DAS, and advanced Wi-Fi mesh networks, like Wi-Fi 6 and above. And so that's what we do. We're a true RF company. And all my RF engineers actually went to universities. They're not just people that we like hired and like went to classes. They went to University of Maryland. It's the top wireless telecommunications school in the country. I like to harvest the best because I want to give my clients the best. And at the end of the day, it's best for me because I have less liability, less issues, more profitability. And that's really at the end of the day, I'm doing this for them. So I want to make sure I'm doing it right.
You brought up one point, and I thought we talked about life safety of the individual. And in other podcasts, I've kind of touched on it a little bit. But you brought it up. I was hoping you could kind of discuss that a little bit, the interlink between cellular and, you know, sure, emergency responder communication enhancement systems, ERCEs, right? So there's two types of DAS. They're both DAS systems. This right. One person usually calls one a DAS and then the other one's ERCEs, right? But there's a little bit of a marriage there. How does that come together in your mind?
It's not a little bit of a marriage, Peter. I'm glad that you brought it up. This has been a hot topic for me for a long time. Since I got in the industry, I found a lack of congruency. And this is a big one. The United States government had passed legislation essentially to mandate ERCS inside new construction and now in existing construction. Great idea, right? And it's following the coattails of what happened at 9/11. We lost 400 and something firefighters, no communication to even tell people to get out of the building, right? It's a really sad story. They actually sent somebody up there, a very fast runner who made it to the 50th floor, and still the building collapsed. That's a really old school way of communication. So they figured out a way to solve that problem back. But there's a big gap. The biggest gap you could have in this communication link, this chain that's supposed to be connected. When I was once in an undercar garage and I had perfect ERCs, the coverage for the ERCs, I was doing with the spectrum analyzer around my neck, I have perfect coverage and I had no cell phone coverage. And I didn't realize like what I was looking at. I'm looking at just the spectrum analyzer, not looking at my cell phone. But when I went up to the first floor, I got like 13 missed phone calls and 11 missed text messages. They all came at once. And I thought to myself right then and there, I'm like, there's a real problem with this entire mentality. There's a missing link that if you force the ERCs, that means that my fire department, my police department, my EMT personnel have great coverage and communication with dispatch and their own cells and control stations. That's great. But how are they ever going to know how to get there? Are we expecting the person who is in trouble to be, make their way to a landline or find a place in the building to get cell phone coverage? That makes no sense at all. So this was highlighted in a situation at Valley Fair Mall in Westfield. I could talk about this now. I'm no longer with the client. Westfield, I deal with all their retailers around them. So I decided to work with Bloomingdale's and Macy's and Nordstrom's and not Westfield because of their behavior. I even emailed the CEO of the company about the situation. About 5 years ago, 6 years ago, before they started doing this huge remodel in San Jose at Valley Fair, it's one of the nicest malls we have in this country. It's gorgeous. You should go check it out. They had us come out and do an RF test, and they failed miserably. They knew it. We gave them a proposal. They said, let's sit on that for a while. We got this other remodel going on. During that time, they asked us to retest. We retested. And this is an interesting situation because I'm testing for Santa Clara Police Department and I'm testing for San Jose Police Department. The mall is so big that one half of the mall is in one jurisdiction. The other half of the mall is in another different jurisdiction. Wow. So I'm sending this information to both people. A year later, they know all about this and they knew that they had deficiencies. They have a perfect cell phone system installed by Tower Communication about 15 years ago. So people have great cell phone coverage, but there's no IRCs, and they knew that there was a problem. And so I get a call from San Jose Police Department saying, hey, we want to talk to you. Are you the company that did the RF test at Valley Fair Mall? I said, sure, I am. Like, are you the owner of the company? I am. Like, well, we want to subpoena some information from you. I'm like, what? What are you talking about? Like, we want to compel you to release your test data to us to prove to us that over a year and a half ago that there was proof that there was an IRC system needed. And I said, I don't feel comfortable doing that. I need to call my customer. And they said, well, you can call your customer, but you're going to give us that information because a lot of things are on the line for you, like your FCC license and other things. You have to comply with us. And I said, what's going on? And they told me what's going on. Apparently, two police officers, one was like in his late 60s, he was about to retire. And another lady, she was, they were walking, patrolling over by Macy's. And four gentlemen wearing masks ran through the mall. They were stealing things. And these police officers tried to get, like, try to stop them. They were overtaken by these four people. They tried to use their radios. They could not radio out. One of them was put in critical condition in the hospital. The other one, the lady, took a severe beating. Luckily, she was younger, and she didn't have to, like, go into, like, you know, into the hospital on a gurney, right? How the people actually responded to the situation is really kind of comical. Somebody saw what was going on, picked up their cell phone and called the police department because the radios of the police officers did not work. So when I heard that, that upset me. That upset me greatly because my kids and my family go to that same mall, which means that mall is not safe because every fireman, policeman, and EMT that goes in there is by themselves until they get out of the building, right? That's not a good system, right? That's not a good situation for all these consumers. But their cell phones are great. They can take selfies in front of stores. That's great for business. It's not great for their life safety. So at that moment, this is years ago, I'm like, this is a major problem in the industry. And I've been telling this to everybody that will listen that we need to change things. And I think that the government finally is starting to do something about it because talking in Safer Building Coalition earlier, actually late last year at a meeting, they were talking about this potentially coming down the pipeline where there would be some legislation that would enforce and make building owners at least have some basic cell phone coverage in areas where they don't have cell phone coverage. If you have an IRC system, you must have a cell phone system so that not just the fire, police, and EMT can have radio coverage, but the people who are in need, maybe they're getting mugged, maybe they've fallen and they, like, they're having a heart attack or whatever it is. They need to be able to get a hold of somebody in a moment. That's their life safety. They need to get a hold of that fire department, that police department, that EMT to come rescue me or help somebody else out. So this marriage has to happen. And I'm surprised that it has not happened because legislation passed in 2011 for IRCs, and we are now in 2014, and cell phone is still not in the books as something that is required. And that's a big problem for the industry, and I'd like to see it solved. And really, it's something that needs to happen sooner rather than later, I think. Especially when you think about the value proposition to these new developers and new owners. If I'm already going the same pathways for IRCs, and if they're mandated to do the cellular DAS now, it'd be a lot less costly for them. So I urge, like, I would love for the government actually move quicker to save the developers money, because if we're doing it at the same time, I'd probably be able to drive 25 to 30% less in labor for the client, which is huge if they're going to be forced to do it. If they're forced to do it 5 years from now, after they have an IRC system and the building's completely sealed, it's going to cost them not 30% more, probably twice the price, because you have to get many other trades involved to pull out the sheetrock, do trimming, painting, floating, all kinds of different things need to happen, disturbance to the business, all kinds of things. So I think the sooner that we can get to a place where we have a congruent communication system that's required, that's for life safety, that's cell phone and IRCs together.
That's amazing, Eli, because I know, you know, when I was an integrator years ago and I would talk to end users, it was always, you know, you want to be concerned with kind of mass notification. Can people be notified if there's an emergency? You know, shelter in place, or whatever it may be, then can they dial out? You know, and I've seen, right, you know, some people, and it's kind of a loaded conversation, like with, you know, voice over Wi-Fi or something. And that's a whole nother thing. But I've had people say, oh, we have Wi-Fi calling. That satisfies that requirement. And then the third piece of it is the first responder piece, the two-way radio piece. Can they communicate? And I agree, there has to be that congruence or whatever, where both of those systems are kind of one and the same. So regardless of who's right there, like you're saying, police, fire, EMT, a shopper, you know, whoever, it, whatever venue, yeah, that they have the ability to get out, to communicate out, but also to communicate in. It's vital.
Right.
And so that, I mean, that story you're saying in San Jose, that's terrifying, you know, because I mean, I had family, right, I have family there, you know, in law enforcement, but just to think like Peter's talking about, you know, the passion we have, it's like, it's to make sure that thing, those things don't ever happen, you know, so people, right, are safe, whether it's our children or whoever in a shopping mall, you know, you want to go do your shopping, get a, you know, some food, whatever, and not have to worry about what if something were to happen, you know, where's my escape plan? Right. No, you should be able just to go and do, right, life and do your business.
And it's happening in San Jose. It's happening everywhere, yeah, right? Yeah. That's just one example. Obviously, that's how that all works. And so it's something that's being addressed. I was glad to hear at Safer Building Coalition that coming up, it's something that's really happening with the government, with them actually trying to enforce something like this. I know the building owners are not going to like it, but at the same time, you know, there's intrinsic liability to these building owners, right? There is. And so they want to CYA. And they want to CYA at the least costly way possible. And that's why I think the sooner that we get to a place where they're both required, I think that it's going to be a lot less costly. It'll be a lot less costly for the owner. And I think the owner will get a lot of benefit out of it as well. One thing that's interesting in regards to cell phone and ERCS, we have this client in Southern California. It's a very marquee property on the corner of Vine and Hollywood Boulevard. El Centro is the name of the apartment complex, 684 units. It's a big guy. And they have an IRC system. We installed it. It's perfect. 2 years later, they called me up with a different problem. It was an economic problem. The property across the street called The View had a cellular DAS and an IRC system, not installed by me. And a lot of their tenants were cutting their leases and moving next door because they had horrible cell phone coverage. So they'd called me up. This is an economic issue. But I, in thinking of it, I'm like, you actually benefited everybody there because now they're even safer, right? So in that way, you know, the building owner decided to get a cellular DAS system through us to complement their building, but they already had the IRC system. And now they realize the pain of not having the cellular DAS. So there's two different things happening, right? One would be it's a life safety concern. But number two, you know, people really expect it, especially, yeah, if they're paying rent to a landlord at an office or if they're paying rent in an apartment complex. They kind of expect it and they really deserve it.
Yeah. Well, and I've seen that in hospitality too, even like Yelp reviews where people will comment that at this hotel, my cell phone didn't work. And so, right, and so for the hotelier or whatever, that's bad. I mean, that's, you know, you want people to be, right, staying at your property, but if people can't use their phones, you know, whatever, Netflix or whatever they want to do, you know, Instagram, whatever, it's like, that's a big detriment. So yeah, I feel like it's just a sign, absolutely, of the times. Everybody wants their, you know, their devices to work everywhere all the time, you know, no questions asked. So yeah.
But it's truly a life safety thing, yeah, right? It truly is. You know, right now, you know, if you were to try to call 911, I mean, it's if you don't have the service, if there's no connection there, then like, what is really the point of having an IRC system in the first place? So they kind of have to go hand in hand. I think also for developers and business owners, there's a way for them to take advantage and leverage that technology for their benefit. And I think that they know that already. I think that push is needed to happen. One thing that is interesting, when I first got into the industry, and I think you remember this, Gilbert, and Peter probably, do you know that back in the day, And when I first got in, because I think our first system was allowed because I had an AT&T DAS at that same property, Epic 1 and 2 and 3, which is that one first property I did in San Jose. And it was with Essex Property Trust. They're a great developer, great people to work with. Love them. Just good people. But back then, you could have cell phone and ERCs on the same coaxial cable.
Yep.
And they separated that. They separated that for life safety reasons. I get it. Because one is like life safety and the other one's just kind of like, it's a luxury, if you will, but not really. Like as we're speaking, it's not really a luxury. I think we kind of go back there, but we go back there with the standards of ERCs, right? Mechanical protection, 2-hour rated, vertical and horizontal. We do that for both and the same pathways. For both ERCs and cellular DAS, we're saving our clients a ton of money. And we're also protecting the life safety element, which is the ERCs, because the DAS, the cell DAS, would be in the same exact mentality and methodology of protecting that cable.
Is the cellular DAS, they don't have the protective standards that the ERCs have. Is that right?
No.
Not even close, right?
Dealing with the carrier, and the carrier just wants to know that you're using approved equipment in a certain mentality. But there's no standards in regards to even battery backup, protecting the cable from mechanical protection, protecting the cable from any kind of fire. Nothing.
Where do you think, your take is really interesting. Cellular DAS and ERCs in the building going forward, essentially mandated by the government. Obviously, there would be probably need to be some delineation. I would think the biggest pushback is developers who don't really want to pay. I mean, that's what it kind of comes down to, right? Because if you have to have two systems that are separated, because you've got, you know, your signal source for one, and then you've got your BDA for another one, right? They're looking at, well, I need more wall space. I need just a lot more costs involved in this. And that's probably going to be the pushback. They're like, it's bad enough. You're going to require, I don't know, $100,000, $80,000 ERCE system. Now I got to pay what for a DAS system? I got to pay $250,000 for a DAS system. I mean, that's probably the real pushback on something like that, I would imagine.
Yeah, exactly. There was like, if you think about it, every single thing, every form of progress our country has made and our society has made has come at a cost. There's always a cost. Right. You either like you Gil was saying, you pay for it now, you pay for it later, right? You can pay for it later with the lawsuit because you didn't comply. So there's always that. And then a lot of times the government kind of supplements, right? They give money back. But in this situation, I don't think we really need government money. What we do need is volume. What the developers need and the owners need is volume. If this becomes mandated, then we're purchasing a lot more equipment all at the same time, right? We could drive down value, we could drive down price by creating more volume, because there's going to need to be a lot of volume very quickly to compensate and keep up with the amount of required systems that would need to be installed. So I think that just by sheer volume alone, and we just talk about basic economics, we're going to be able to drive down the price and make it a lot more palatable for these developers and owners. And what's more, I think, is that maybe the government doesn't give money back as like actual money to these developers, but maybe they give them some kind of a credit because their properties are, quote unquote, completely life safety. Now, let's talk about this for a second. I deal with lead green builders all the time, and they get so much money for making their properties efficient and making them green and sustainable. They get a ton of money from the government for this. I mean, and it's great. You know, it's great. It's good. It's good stuff. It's not life safety, though. It's just about emissions. It's about Title 24 glass. It's about protecting the heat that's inside the property and protecting the cold that's outside the property from getting in the property, or vice versa, right? So it's these types of things that are actually being funded by the government, right? So if we think about life safety, I think life safety is more important than my comfortability. I really do think so, because I could be a little warm, but I'm alive, versus being a little cold and dead. So I think that that's a conversation to be had, and it's really kind of, it makes too much sense, right? That the government doesn't help out in one way or another. It could be on the back end with some kind of a tax credit. So this makes it more lucrative for the owner. At the end of the day, it's going to be a gun against the owner's head, right? That's how all these mandated things, it's a gun against the owner's head. You want to open your doors, you want to stay in business, you got to do these things, right? You have to have ADA compliant elevator, right? You have to have ADA compliant units. You got to have a ramp walkway for ADA. I mean, like, these are all things that have just come down the pipeline the last 30 years, right? I'm in a building right now The building's 50 years old. It never had ADA compliance. The owner was forced to put in an elevator and a ramp. I mean, he paid it out of his own pocket. These are things that have to happen, right? And that's more about inclusivity of people. But this all falls along the same lines. And I think there is a way for the government to help out. But I think that more importantly, the developers and these owners, they got to see there's more of a benefit to this because there's a marketability to it in regards to having both an ERC system and a cellular DAS system and framing it as life safety. And that's the way it needs to be framed. It's not a luxury. It should be framed as life safety. Now, the developer in the back of his mind needs to understand that and could be told that this is more than just the life safety. It could be used as a luxury, but used as a marketing platform for you where people are actually checking in and doing posts readily whenever they want to and sending pictures about your property. It could be used for your benefit as well. And so I think that there's just a ton of ways that we can slice this cap, but I think that the government needs to kind of step in and help these developers out because at the end of the day, they're doing it in other ways that are not life safety. They should be able to share this money with us, right? And share this money with this industry. Yeah.
And what I think is interesting too, Elijah, the LEED buildings kind of force our hand on the RF on the wireless side because we get no signal in the building. So yeah, it's great that it's so energy efficient, but you have no signal of anything coming in or going out. So it's an interesting point too, that it's kind of our hand is being forced into our industry developing and growing, maturing more, you know, because of the energy efficiency of the buildings that are being built.
Yeah, I mean, if we just fund one less war, we got cellular DAS in every single building in America. I mean, if the government really wants to look at it that way, I mean, just one less war, we're done. And everybody, all of our citizens will be a lot more connected and communicating with each other. It's not that expensive, guys.
So what do you see going on in the industry with your company and its footprint about where you're building and different jurisdictions? I know you're up in the Bay Area, and I know ERCs and CellDAS, that area is more mature than other areas, right? But really, there's a lot of areas that are still the wild, wild west. I mean, I've done enough safer, you know, there are jurisdictions either not enforcing at all or really don't know what they're doing. What do you see since you're on the ground building these things?
Right. What I'm seeing is there needs to be a uniformed approach. There needs to be a major player that comes in that's a trusted brand. That's me. That's what I'm going to do with DAS Systems. Right now, we're in Florida, we're in Georgia, we're in Texas, we're in Colorado, and we're in California. And we're just starting up now in Arizona. I would like to take the show on the road across the country to give every single one of my developers and clients the same uniformed approach, what they're used to here, that white glove treatment that DAS Systems does so well across the nation. That's what I'd like to do. I'd like to have that happen because I'm getting calls from people all over the country saying, hey, man, like, we don't like the local players and we've worked with you back in the Bay Area. Can you come out here? So I'm hearing that more and more. And so that's an opportunity for me and our company to kind of grow and fill that space. I want to fill that space of uniformity and a certain level of clarity and execution and alignment for my clients. And that's what I want to do. And it's really that simple. It's like, if we could just get behind and get aligned and have a clear picture of how we're going to do things, and we just repeat that process, it's just that simple. It costs a little money to do that, and it costs a little extra effort, but I think it's well worth it. And I think that my clients, it resonates with them. So that's what we're pushing to do. I would like that to happen so that some of the players that are in the industry that maybe shouldn't be in the industry don't affect us in a negative way and don't impact properties in a negative way.
So that's a big problem. I mean, that's a big problem. You got shoddy work. It actually hurts everyone because it all gets talked about. It all goes up the pipe. And then the players who are in power hear about, well, the system caused this problem. The system was more expensive than it should have been. They didn't need a system. Absolutely. And someone tested it incorrectly and said they had to get one. Things right. like and that, right? I mean, and that's just shoddy workmanship across the board, right? So if we can kind of maybe resolve some of that or do better training or bring more people in to have them more prepared to do this kind of work.
Right. The thing is it just comes down to just being a little less greedy, right? Most mistakes happen because people get greedy in this industry. I mean, that's kind of across the board, right? It's unfortunate, but you know where I'm going with that is a lot of times I'm hearing from clients that I'm an open book, and you're going to even know my profit margins, right? I'm going to like let you know, break it all down. Like there'll be eight line items that are very descriptive of what we're doing. We hear from clients all the time that, Aliyah, your proposals are very detailed, more detailed than others, and your price points are a little higher than others. I've heard that for many years. All those people that didn't go with me, they go with me now because my price points are actually cheaper, because I don't hide anything and I don't play games with customers. There are some really good salespeople out there that have framed this business in a way so that it's kind of like a hook and line, and they bait people in, right? And then they go, oh my gosh, I didn't know about all these other things, but they look really attractive. It's like catfishing. We all know what catfishing is, right? Uh-huh. Put lipstick on a pig, take a picture of it, and then you show up and it's like not what you expected. Uh-huh. That's what's happening a lot in our industry. So what people do is they'll come in and they'll lowball a project, and the unsuspecting customer will not know that really lowball number that they're not going to be able to accomplish. And then as soon as they get into contract and they start working, that's when like, oh, you must have missed this, or did you not catch this? And this is the price. And so then I hear from my customers at the end of the day that up front, I'm 20% more or 15% more, but on the back end, I was 20% less. So it took a few years, and it hurts. It hurts to lose customers, right? It hurts to lose customers on price points when I know that I'm being totally forthright. I'm being totally transparent. I'm itemizing, line itemizing everything. My sales guys were like hurting because we're like, dude, Aliyah, this is a hard, like it's, we're getting smoked out there. And now we're like really successful because they all came back around, and it's a long play. So I say, be patient. Don't be greedy. Little piggies get fed and the hogs get slaughtered. This old saying, right? But like everyone wants to take this big bite of that burger initially, and they end up choking on it later. And that's the problem. That's the problem. Just take a freaking little bite of it, dude. Slow down, man. Slow down. You're not going to get all the money on this one deal. I find it comical sometimes because I work with these developers and they tell me what these other people are doing. I'm like, dude, are they just trying to like retire on this project? What are you doing? This is about longevity. It's a long race. It's a journey. You have RMRs that come with these properties. Every single one of my properties come with the RMR. I do optimization. We go back out there and do tune-ups. We upgrade the properties. We do annual testing and recertification. We upgrade their batteries. So everything comes with the RMR. You're going to get your money at the back end. Just treat the people right. And like, you know, when I go to a store and I'm buying food at like, let's just say at a restaurant, I'm like looking at the menu. I know what I'm getting. The worst thing ever is when you get something in the back end, you're like, what the heck is this? I didn't order this.
Surprise.
Surprise. So if you don't like it happening to yourself, don't do it to others, because they won't come back to your restaurant.
And it hurts the whole industry too. So in that case, it would hurt the restaurant industry. And in our case, it would hurt the wireless, the public safety industry. Absolutely.
Absolutely. And here's the deal. We need buildings like malls and places like that to be safe and make people feel comfortable. Why? Because the big bad wolf is taking that away from society. Amazon effectively would like that all to go away. All online retailers would like us to stay at home forever and not go out and shop, because that's where they make their money. So like, you know, make the property safe. If you're the building owner, I implore you, make it pretty, make it fun, and make it safe so that you can combat the guys. We like the culture of going out. I like the culture of taking my kids. I don't want to be stuck at home all day. But when I go to these properties, I want to make sure they're safe and fun. And, you know, so that's where I'm at. If you make people feel safe, they're going to come. You know, they're going to come out there. And I think that's important. We highlight that with communication and safety.
Safe and fun. I'm all safe, about both fun, of them, you know?
Yeah,
I love it.
I mean, that's all. It's a changing world, man. And the consumer expects a lot more. And they expect it rapidly, right? As they flip through their phone, buying things, right? And so, you know, go the whole way. You know, make it pretty, paint it, make it beautiful, have some fun stuff for the kids, fun stuff for the parents, all that stuff. But it's got to be safe. It's got to be safe. Because if something bad happens, then we're just back at home again because we're afraid and we're just shopping at home again. And we know this can happen. This happened before.
Sure. I mean, fear is a big thing that compels people to do things, right?
And if you love your customers, you'll make sure that they got good communication. It's love that drives out fear.
Yeah. Yeah, it does.
Love comes at a cost. Love comes at a cost.
Very well said. Very well said. Okay. Well, I think we've hit a lot of great topics here. I've certainly been enlightened by the conversation. It's really, really amazing, I think, what you've done. I think you know, everyone needs a pat on the back sometimes, and I think you've done some pretty impressive stuff. And I think you've built what appears to be an amazing company so far, and that's got a lot of progress and a lot of things going for it. But at the same time, it, like you kind of mentioned, there's an end game here, right? And the end game really is to make people safer and make right. our emergency responders be able to communicate so people can be safer. So when we go and we want to play and we want to have fun and where we live, we can all enjoy it and have that peace of mind. Because that's really right. critical and that's really important, you know? So you hit on a lot of those things in a lot of really kind of cool ways, because I think you come from an angle where I'm building it. Me and my team, we're putting this together, and this is kind of what we need to do, guys. Listen up. This is kind of the challenges we're running into. So right. I appreciate that perspective, because we've had multiple perspectives on here and everyone's a little bit different and everyone comes from a slightly different angle. So having that experience is invaluable, frankly. And that said, Eli, I appreciate you coming on, and Gil, thanks for coming on with me. It was a great time, guys. And I think that's it for this episode today. Thank you, guys.
I want to thing. It's not me. It's not just me. I really got to give a shout out to my entire team. They've been with me for many years. And in fact, my two partners have been with me for over 15 years. And that's really what a testament. It's not me. It's these people that are surrounding me that come together, gain clarity, align around that clarity, and then go execute. So I got to say thank you to my team.
Well said, man. Well said.
Awesome.
Yeah, I just love that tenacity and that commitment to excellence. I mean, you guys have done a great job. That's impressive.
Why not try? You know what? If you try to be excellent, first of all, perfection doesn't exist. But if you try to, well, the worst thing that's going to happen is you'll get close.
Yeah, that can't hurt.
Yeah.
Can't hurt.
Being close to excellent is better than being sucky.
Not trying at all. Hey, listen, I want to tell you guys something. 2024 is going to be a great year for all of us. For me, my motto this year is self-growth and self-development. The best way I can serve my people and my family is by being the best person I can be with the best skills. Seriously.
Agreed.
Self-development.
Agreed. Awesome. All right, gentlemen. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. Thank Appreciate you. It. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Desktop by Gamma, keeping you connected and protected.